Welcome to the RC Noob Podcast. This is episode 25. Joined by an old friend for this episode, Mr. Josh Howard. Hi, Josh.
Well, hello. How's it going? I'm doing very good. How are you doing today?
I'm doing very well. Very well. It's been a long time since we've talked. The last time we chatted, I was walking around the block in South Dakota on vacation with my family, and we were chatting about various RC things, and now we're finally able to connect and do a show.
Very true.
I'm very excited to talk to you about tonight's topic or today's topic. Main topic is 3D printing, and you've got some fun stuff going on in your RC garage as well. So we will dive into that very shortly. As far as general housekeeping things, I don't really have anything new. Had some nice weather this past weekend. I took out my Axial RR10 bomber for its first real shakedown with a 20-turn motor in it, and very pleased with the results. I did a little video that I posted to the RC Noob YouTube channel last night with some onboard GoPro footage. I think that 20-turn motor really wakes the vehicle up, gives it a lot more zip. The 35-turn motor that is stock in that vehicle is good, and really, I think it's an excellent motor.
It's great, but you don't get quite the RPM as you do with the lower turn motors.
Right, your top end isn't as impressive as your low end. And I am running, full disclosure, I'm still running nickel metal hydride. I have yet to get into LiPo land, but I will eventually get there at some point in time. It's going to take a major overhaul of all my charging equipment and things like that. So I'm taking my time. But
come to the dark side, Tim.
I will get there eventually. But honestly, the 20 turn on nickel metal is a blast.
It is. It's going to be even more of a blast when you get LiPo.
Yeah, I've seen some 20 turns on LiPo. I've even seen the 35 turn on 3S, and it's got some more pep than what I had. But honestly, I've seen the Wraith with a 20 turn motor, and you've listened to an earlier episode that I did with Andrew Jurisic. We were talking about the Wraith versus the Bomber. Mm-hmm. And I had chatted with him back and forth on Facebook. I said, okay, here's what I'm looking at, either the Wraith or the Bomber. And I said, I like the Wraith because it's got a little bit higher higher speed motor in it. And it really, comparatively, it looks like a similar vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
And after, he pretty much said, well, speed can be made. You can add speed later on. And yeah, I eventually agreed with that. And I like the look of the Bomber overall. I like the fact that it's a hybrid, if you want to call it that, of the Wraith and the Yeti. It's got the latest and greatest stuff and components in it. So that's the route that I ended up going.
Well, it seems to me, I haven't seen one in person other than with a body on top of it, but the pictures of the chassis that I've seen online, it looked a little more scale to me, which I thought was a little more interesting compared to, like, the Yeti is really amazing, but it's not really in my wheelhouse, I'd say. I kind of like the scale look a little bit more, and like you say, it's more of a hybrid. Yeah. Of different vehicles, which is kind of cool.
It is a blast. No matter what motor I have in it, it's a blast to drive. I fully intended it, keyword intended, it to be just a fun basher. Keep it simple. Don't throw a bunch of stuff on it. Just a machine I can grab and go and run and not put a lot into it. And I've reached a point where I'm waffling. I've got an idea for a quote unquote build. I've got 3 sheets of styrene sitting on my workbench. I've got a concept. I've got a couple sketches, and I've got a Batman figurine. So you could guess where this is going.
No.
Bat Bomber. But after taking it out this past weekend and I don't know, I'm still hemming and hawing whether or not I want to go full bore with my Bat Bomber concept, but it may be a slow build out.
As inexpensive as it is to actually get used chassis and gearboxes and axles and things like that, to me, it always seems less expensive if you're going to do a project like that to simply go and buy a used setup, so that way you don't feel so bad when you're hacking it to pieces, essentially, to make it into whatever it is that you want. Like the project that I'm working on right now is on a G-Made chassis that we bought locally.
Okay.
That was just is very, very rough. Was just kind of a bundle of parts, and I wanted something that I didn't necessarily have to feel bad about modifying. And so in order to save a few bucks just to kind of get crawling with it, I actually just bought a Red Cat Everest 10. And the gearbox, while not the same as an Axial SCX-10, it is somewhat similar, and it can mount on the chassis. And so what I'm doing, because this chassis didn't come with a gearbox or anything like that, I'm actually taking the components off of the Red Cat and putting them on the G-Made chassis, as goofy as that sounds, just to have something that's just to get down the road, so to speak, till I can kind of like upgrade to a little bit nicer components. So it's interesting, and I recommend to people that if you already have some experience with something, like, it's always better to get something used that you won't feel quite as bad, especially if you're replacing a lot of components, or maybe you're like, well, I really like the chassis, but I don't like the gearbox or something like that. Like the chassis that I had was intended to be set up for an SCX-10 gearbox, but there's only like two holes that are different on the Red Cat gearbox, believe it or not. So with how it mounts up, it's two holes different.
Okay.
It actually looks very, very similar. I would just encourage you to check out eBay, sometimes even your local Craigslist and Facebook groups. There are a ton of Facebook groups that people are always selling like used Axial stuff, because there's always somebody out there that's went and, you know, torn the crap out of their Yeti or their Bomber or their SCX-10, and they just kind of get tired of it, I guess, tired of fixing it, and they'll just throw parts up for sale. And you know, it's a good start if you want to get a little more in depth in a project.
Yeah, my plans right now are to leave everything chassis wise as is. It's going to be primarily a cosmetic upgrade with a custom interior.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a matter of the biggest question is whatever I build, can it withstand what I still want to be able to do with the vehicle? So therein lies the question. But for right now, I may just leave it as is and just have fun running it. And if I get bored, just running it, and then I'll convert it over to the Bat Bomber.
Well, honestly, some of the fun, as long as you're realistic about how much time you actually spend on stuff, there are ways, you know, to add some ribbing and things like that inside there, some structure, sort of make things a little more stout, so that if you have a rollover, something of that nature, it'll hold up. But I personally think, as long as you're not spending thousands of hours on something, I think it's fun to go and kind of tear things up and then either completely redo it or like reimagine what it is that you're working on.
Sure. Yeah, I'm the same way. I get
battle scars, dude. Battle scars.
Yeah. I've already wrapped the top panel and one of the side panels in a matte black vinyl.
Nice.
Just to see what it looked like. And of course, I barrel rolled that thing, the bomber, so many times yesterday with having the faster speed, not being used to having to slow down as much when I corner.
Mm-hmm.
It ended up on its lid more times than I can count.
Yep, traction rolling.
So I've got scuffs and some battle damage already on the roof area. So I know vinyl won't work for the final project, but I just wanted to get an idea of the flat black and an inexpensive way to customize the look of a vehicle. So we'll see where that goes.
From that end,
that's about all I've done with my machines. I did add some lights to my youngest son's HGP 402 crawler. He has yet to drive that. I'm still waiting for my ankle to heal up or stop throbbing every time he grabs the controller, at least. But you know, we'll get that out, and I've got it. Surprisingly enough, there are things about that machine, for as inexpensive as it was, it does have a 3-channel receiver and a 3-channel transmitter. So I've got the lights hooked up to where he can control them from the controller. And I think that's pretty cool. He thinks it's pretty cool that he can turn the flashing red lights on and have like a police truck and then turn them off and have a normal undercover off-road vehicle. So
it's about the simple things.
Oh yeah.
Like,
yeah. And I'll be honest, I think that's pretty cool too. So,
heck yeah.
So with that being said, that's pretty much my end of things. So let's get into your side of the hobby, Josh. And you already talked about the crawler/trail truck that you're working on. If you want to start with that, and then we can dovetail into our 3D printer topic.
Well, I have that G-Made chassis. It does have G-Made axles. I think I only spent $80 on it. It wasn't very expensive, but it didn't come with the gearbox or electronics. And so that's why I decided to buy the Red Cat, just to kind of get the thing rolling for a while. But my main focus is on like what kind of body I'm going to put on it, the things to make it look like an actual truck.
Sure.
And so I actually... I'm a big D21 Nissan hardbody fan.
Okay.
Because that was my first vehicle. And so I actually ordered a Lexan body from Blue Groove Racing, I believe it is.
Okay.
Up in Canada. I may have that wrong. They do some excellent reproduction bodies. They're not exactly like the Tamiya bodies or... Kyosho or the other out of production bodies, but they're really close. Team Blue Groove, I believe, is the name of it.
Okay.
But they do a really great job. I've not had any problems with any of their bodies so far. I found them to be pretty stout, and the detail on them is pretty great. The only downside to their bodies is they don't include stickers with them. So it's up to you sort of to either make a sticker set or be really good at masking and spraying, which I've gotten pretty good at masking and spraying, but I have access to a nice printer, and so I kind of like to just print stickers sometimes and put them on there. But that's my big project right now. My wife also got a trail truck. Hers is an RC 4-wheel drive. I don't remember specifically what model is, because she also bought hers used. It's got an axial 35 turn motor in it. Okay. And it seems to be fantastic. She works with me at the company that I work at. And on lunch breaks, she'll actually go out and just crawl around with the thing, which is pretty cool.
Nice.
So that was what got me getting my crawler chassis so that I could go out there and do it with her. But I, last time we talked about doing some RC drifting, things of that nature. And one of the people that I work with, they had a Tamiya Mini Cooper that was extremely fast. And he was like, hey, we've got some time on our lunch breaks, we should start racing. And so I actually got a Tamiya MO6, which is the rear wheel drive mini platform. Okay. Tweaked a little bit. I thought it was pretty fantastic just right out of the box. It handles extremely well. When you think of rear wheel drive, typically in a very small wheelbase, fast car, you usually think about doing donuts and spinning out and stuff like that. But I've got the thing just like dialed in on asphalt so well, it doesn't spin out, handles just like a real car. It's very, very fun. But I've sort of converted him over because we moved into a larger office space and there was tons more carpet, which meant tons more grip. And so I got him into a Tamiya TT02. I think you remember me saying a while back that I really enjoyed the one that I had.
Yeah.
Well, I bought a second one and I am in the process of putting a Traxxas Velion system in it so that we can have matching cars essentially.
Okay.
So we can race on our lunch breaks. But really that's about it. I still have the drift stuff. I still enjoy doing the drift thing, but my next thing for the drift stuff really is to I'd like to make a more simplified chassis, just because I like how with the scale rigs, a lot of the axial stuff, it's very simplified, and I feel like a lot of the on-road stuff gets complicated very quickly. So I'd kind of like to make something that, in the same way that the scale rigs are an accurate or somewhat accurate representation of the real trucks, I'd like to do something that's like maybe a accurate representation of a real car. So that's kind of my next goal, but I'm trying to just do one project at a time. I got my wife's truck sort of squared away a little bit, and then she got a snowplow for the front, and I'm trying to put that on there, and it's just been one thing after another. So there's a lot on the table, but I'm just trying to do one thing at a time so I don't get a little too overwhelmed.
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you. Like I said, bouncing between my bomber and my youngest son's rig and looking at my Jeep, which is, you know, I think it's as good as it's going to get right now.
And it doesn't take long either. Like you get a few RCs and you go out and, you know, your son's playing with something, it breaks. Doesn't matter where you are in your project. It's kind of like, okay, how can I get him up and running? So
right. He'll
leave me alone and I can get back to what I'm doing.
That's, you know, and I think I mentioned this in an earlier episode. That seemed to be the story of our last summer. Every time my oldest son and I would go out somewhere, his vehicle would have an issue and I'd have to set my stuff down and push it aside and say, all right, can we fix it here? No. Oh, great. We have to order parts. All right.
Yeah.
Well, I think we're squared away there.
That's why really, and I think that you've said it before as well, and you've made it a point to sort of say to people, you know, there is a valid place for children when it comes to RC, for like the Nikos and the New Right and the Jada of the world to just have something that doesn't require parts all the time.
Right.
Yeah, it's slow. It doesn't perform like a hobby grade one, but you just throw it out there and it just works. And I mean, I'm sure there'll be somebody that'll be like, well, I got such and such brand and something happened or whatever. You know, those things are just a fraction of the cost of the hobby ones. And for some of those kids, it's like, it's like you said with your son's new bright mudslinger Jeep, I think it was, how he just drove it and drove it and drove it and drove it and drove it. It's like,
yeah,
you know, how much did that Jeep cost? Well, how much enjoyment did he get out of it for the amount of money that you spent?
And exactly,
that's time that he's driving something that he's not to say that he's intentionally breaking your stuff, but it's like that's time that he's spent out there with you probably also running something at the same time that he hasn't really bugged you.
Right. It, they all have their pluses and minuses and everything in between. And, and now all of my children have vehicle, and they're not all hobby grade, but they all have a vehicle capable of going through grass. So
that's great, though.
In and of itself is a win. So I'm looking forward to the snow eventually melting and us being able to get out and enjoy the scale trail runner side of the hobby. I just real quick before we go neck deep in 3D printing, for your rig, are you using the electronics and the motor and everything else from your Red Cat on your G-Made?
Absolutely.
Okay.
I just tested it all actually today to make sure that it worked. And I immediately started ripping it apart. Because there are good parts on the Red Cat stuff. The thing that I would say about that specific Red Cat crawler is that one's set up with links more like a competition crawler. And I don't necessarily need those for my build, but I'm probably just going to keep them for a while. Same thing with the axles. The axles are like a smaller SCX 10 style axle. The electronics for what I'm doing, which is just going outside, just running right beside my wife as she crawls. It's probably going to be just fine. And there was not anything in the office today while everyone was gone at lunch break. There was not anything that I couldn't crawl. So I figured, you know, when you start to really add up the cost of an ESC and a motor, and for me, I needed a gearbox too, and I needed drive shafts to go down to the axles, a receiver and a remote. All that stuff was over $200. And then my wife just casually mentioned, she's like, "Oh, well, you had looked at, you know, that Everest 10 before, right?" And I said, "Yeah." He's like, "Well, why don't you just go ahead and get that? Because that has all everything that you need, right? Has all electronics." And I said, "Well, yeah, I guess so."
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, pretty much everything that's there that I can use is getting transplanted. One thing that I noticed today was that I can potentially make the battery tray fit inside the chassis by modifying it. Or, as we'll go into a little bit later, I can use it to take measurements in order to use a program like Tinkercad to make something that I could 3D print. So it's like a good basis to take measurements off of. As I, you know, either I can hack something up and make it work, or I can hack it up, make it work, take measurements off of that, and then actually 3D print like a final piece that's my own piece. You know, because some people, they like to Dremel out more material, or they want to have their, maybe their name or something like that on there, symbol. But for me, I just kind of want it to be functional. So I don't really care what it looks like right now, because most of that's all going to get covered by a pretty sweet body, whatever I end up putting on top, which will probably be that Nissan hard body. Say that 10 times fast.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. That's cool that you can take so much from one vehicle, transfer it over to something else and make it your own and make it work above all.
I mean, I've even seen people back when I was just trying to get, get back into the hobby, because I'd been away for a while, gotten out of college, didn't have a lot of money. So I was buying new bright stuff just to have like something to tinker with. And I think I had a Jada Drifter as well, which was pretty amazing for what it was. Not anything like a hobby, but it was it was good fun outside on the concrete for, you know, 20 minutes at a time. But the crawlers themselves, the entry price point was relatively low. I think they were like $70, if that, at the time. And you could just do very small modifications, even though they had hard tires, and you could get them to climb pretty amazing things by just making really small modifications to them. So, you know, regardless of what chassis you have, you can do small things in order to help increase the top speed of it, or help it in order to crawl better, or help it turn better. Maybe if you're into on-road, or if you're into drifting, make it slide better. There's all sorts of different things that you can do, but it's just, you know, like pinpointing what the weak point is on your chassis and trying to do something small to improve that.
Yeah, that's a more thing I love about the hobby. You know, just, and I'm thinking back to out of all my vehicles, I think one of the most enjoyable quote unquote builds has been taking that Red Cat RS10, which was my first crawler, mm-hmm. and turning that into something somewhat resembling a scale trail truck, you know, and it's a hodgepodge of parts from different Axial, from Red Cat, from you name it, we've got parts on it from all these different things.
Mm-hmm.
Just, you know, taking those different things and custom making frame rails and doing things to make it work the way that you want. It's just a great thing for the hobby, and a great way to get the creative juices flowing.
Oh yeah, I mean, that's sort of the spirit of the hobby. Is it seemed like I remember when I was much younger and I had just gotten into the hobby as a teenager, it seemed like a ton of people, they just used whatever parts that they could get to fit on their, whatever it was that they were racing or driving at the time. It didn't, like, all the RC cars, it wasn't necessarily that they were the same, but a lot of the stuff was similar enough that you could interchange a lot of parts. And that's sort of, to me, you can still do that to a certain extent if you know what you're doing, but there's just so many more models and so many, I guess you could say, like, the tolerances of stuff are so tight now that you'd have to really do like some modifications to get some things to fit. But I really like the idea of taking something and just using whatever fits in order to make it work. Cause that's reminds me of when I first got it into the hobby. It's so funny, like we've talked about Traxxas before, but so much of their stuff is based upon even loosely like a couple basic ideas. And so many parts are interchangeable on all their vehicles. But that, yeah, I mean, especially in the on-road touring sedan, when I was doing USVTA racing, I mean, it was like people had to use very specific parts for their specific cars. And there was like no deviation whatsoever into, you know, buying an off brand or something like that. It had to be that specific brand. And some of that is people being just brand loyal and not wanting to stray from that. But I didn't really have that luxury. So even though I was buying to my parts, I was buying parts that weren't originally intended for the lowly TT01 that I was originally racing. But I liked following your RS10 build, and every time that I go back and look at pictures of that, it makes me happy because of, I mean, that's what RCing is all about, you know, make it your own, make it what you want it to be, not what somebody else wants it to be.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, in that, that's the perfect segue. In that same idea, in that spirit of making something your own, 3D printing has been a topic that I wanted to talk about and write about specific to the hobby for a long time. And I recently discovered that you and your wife own two 3D printers.
Yes, we do own two 3D printers. It took a long time for us to just get the one. But once we got one, it was like, hey, this is pretty cool. When can we go back and get a second one? So now tonight it's quiet, but pretty much all weekend long, it was two 3D printers going at the same time constantly.
That's between a vinyl cutter / plotter and a 3D printer are two pieces of non-RC specific hardware I've been looking at with much interest over the last few months. And really the 3D printing, I think, looking at just overall technological advances, I think that has been one of the biggest unintentional boosts for the hobby that I've ever seen.
It's not just the hobby. Like, if you're somebody who just likes to make stuff, regardless of what that stuff might be, like, I as much as we have actually used ours, I've said to my wife, I'm like, I have no idea why there is not a 3D printer in every single classroom in America, because you can be so incredibly creative with the 3D printer. And it's not just about, there are some things, yes, it's true, that you cannot get to print properly, but half of trying to get something to print sometimes is trying to find a creative way to actually start it on the bed. Or sometimes there's like supports that you can add in order so that they're just very thin supports. And when you finish printing it, you just cut the supports off. And that, in doing that, you can get a lot more unique shapes that you would normally not be able to get. Because the way that our 3D printer works is it's just basically hot molten plastic, layer after layer after layer, you know, just like you're putting another layer of icing on a cake over and over and over again. But what that does is you can only go at certain angles, and you can only do like our older 3D printer. It doesn't want to do holes very well. They end up becoming a little more blocky and square. Okay. Versus the new one, it'll do pretty round holes. I mean, pieces will fit together extremely well. And that was just a difference of maybe 6 months difference worth of software and hardware. The two 3D printers that we have are a XYZ DaVinci 1 and a XYZ DaVinci 1.1. And both of them are about the most plug and play 3D printers that I've ever seen. I mean, we have a giant one at work that's, you know, one of the $20,000 ones. And that thing has the bed. It's very overly complex. You really have to babysit it to make sure that everything happens right. Well, this unit, I mean, we bought each one on sale, so we didn't pay full price for it. But the retail on one of those units is $549, which does sound like a lot. But if you consider that you're going to spend $300 to $500 on a very upscale RC, I guess you could say, it is possible to buy a 3D printer now and 3D print an open sourced RC car. And an open source just means that it's not owned. The design of it is not owned by any one person. It's just a community that has contributed to the design and R&D of the parts. So there are files out there that you just download. It is a tedious process to print each individual part. That's why I haven't printed an entire RC, but for something like an individual part, such as I've printed suspension arms before. They weren't that great, but they did they do work. You can print an entire chassis if you really want to, especially with the scale crawling. As long as you can fit stuff on that bed, which is the heated surface the molten plastic goes onto, you can 3D print it. You know, the one thing that you do have to consider is if you want to print something that's very long, you're going to have to make it multiple pieces. And that basically means for me, like if I'm building scale crawler chassis, I'm going to make it like a jigsaw puzzle so that you have to actually bolt the pieces together. So I'm going to think about it, you know, if you're going scale, really go scale, you know, make it like an actual, maybe a truck chassis where it has to be, you know, screwed or bolted together in different places. And some people would be like, oh, well, it's not a single piece. Well, yeah, that is true. It wouldn't be nearly as solid as the G-Mate is just a single stamped piece of metal. But it looks awesome. I mean, it looks really, really cool. And you can print in different colors. So if you really wanted a specific color, you could 3D print the parts in that color. I really like when I have a color, even if it's black and it's accentuated by some sort of hardware that's a different color against it. So a lot of the stuff my wife's printing is just white right now, but it's like a neutral white that's easy to paint with a model paint. Because we're printing in ABS and that model paint will, it sticks to it. Okay. I mean, it's not great, but we're also doing mostly scale stuff. So you're not really thinking about it just bashing on things. If you're going to do something that's like for a higher speed, higher impact application, you would want to print probably in the color it is that you'd want the final result to be, just to ensure that the color stays correct. And there are downsides to 3D printing. I mean, with all those layers of plastic on there, depending on what the part is, if it's a thicker part, it will actually put honeycomb in there in order to create like an inner structure so you don't have as much plastic, but so it's also stronger.
Sure.
But on a lot of the thinner stuff, if there's not a lot of structure to it, like I have a phone case right here in my hand that I 3D printed, and it's not thick enough to have that honeycomb structure. It's just layers upon layers of plastic. And I've probably had it for several months now, probably 5 or 6 months now. It's still really starting to degrade. It's starting to peel apart. But you got to think, it's been in my hand, it's been in my pocket, it's been dropped, it's been, like, I have not taken very good care of it. And this was probably the second thing that we printed on our 3D printer. So, we didn't really know very much at the time. We didn't know we could change settings, things of that nature. Which you can change settings and make prints better. You can make the print faster. A lot of it's just patience and knowing what it is that you're doing. But with the XYZ stuff, there are different options software-wise in order to improve print quality or to improve print speed. But just right out of the box, I mean, you could buy one tomorrow, set it up, get it going, start printing, show your kids how to do it maybe once or twice, and then they would... It's easy enough that they would be able to print themselves. It's quite amazing.
Yeah, and that goes to the lack of a better word, the cool factor that I think is that 3D printing brings is the fact that it opens up so many different doors. And even if you don't know how to create a 3D model yourself, you can download, or you can purchase patterns. You can download patterns. As you said, there are open source patterns and things, files online that you can access.
There is actually a Pinterest for models. I believe it's called PinShape, if I recall correctly. I haven't, cool. I don't use it very often, but you can actually go on there, find somebody who has made something that you're interested in, and it there's actually a monetary system where you could pay them. Like a good example of this is changing the steering on the G-Made from being off of the axle and onto the chassis itself so that the servo would be up off of the axle.
Okay.
I just like that from a scale look perspective, so I don't see any electronics. Something like that was only like $2.60 for the file. Yeah, so $2.60 plus whatever it cost you in time and plastic in order to print it. And the cartridges, you know, you had asked me about the cartridges the other day, and I told you, oh, you know, they're $30 or something like that. I think the price is actually a little less now than what it was, and they changed the design of the cartridges, at least for XYZ, because it takes like an ink cartridge type system. With a spool inside, and what that gives you is it tries to protect the plastic from moisture, has like a little scrubber that will scrub the plastic as it comes out of there to try to eliminate burrs and dust and things like that from getting in your print. But you can purchase the spools apparently now for around $20 whenever they have sales, so you could, you know, you could print whatever color you want for the most part. You just have to refill those cartridges or buy new cartridges. There are different, there's several different companies that make different 3D printers, and a lot of them just use plain plastic spools. But what we've sort of learned in our experience is that those plastic spools, while they're great because you can buy really big ones, so you can print for long periods of time without ever having to change. But it's a lot harder to control humidity and the dust that gets on your plastic and things of that nature. If you have too much dust on the plastic, or I guess you could just say foreign objects in the room, the plastic doesn't want to stick to itself quite as well. So there are different things to kind of consider if you do decide to buy a 3D printer. But yeah, I mean, chances are anything that you want to make has already been made. If you want to make it, Tinkercad, T-I-N-K-E-R-C-A-D, is done by AutoCAD. You can pretty much do any simple shape that you want. It's very, very easy to use. That was actually what I did my very complicated triple XS Losi arm in, and it worked really, really well. And that's free. I mean, there are tons of free solutions out there. And I think that's really where the 3D printing shines is there's so many solutions out there, and it encourages people to be creative. In the case of the scale crawler stuff, it's not just the parts to go on the actual frame and whatnot, but my wife over the weekend printed a big faux rolling tool chest that was scale, so she could set it on her desktop next to her trail rig, kind of like a little garage. I think you had seen, we printed some jack stands. So they were scaled jack stands that while I was working on the trail rig, it was sitting on jack stands. Just little stuff like that. It's out there. It's free. And it's not just for scale crawling, but it could be for anything. I mean, you could take that stuff, make it slightly smaller, which is very easy in a lot of the programs. And, you could print it smaller for like a 24th scale model for just like a normal model kit. You could potentially 3D print your own model kit. Ford was really on the forefront of auto manufacturers who said, you know, everybody, as soon as a new model comes out, they 3D model it. They're not always very accurate. So we're going to give people access to the 3D models that are 100% accurate. So that's what they did, is they went ahead and they used TurboSquid as a partner, and you can actually purchase the CAD for the new Ford GT or the new Raptor or a lot of these newer Ford vehicles, or for a fee, if you do not have a 3D printer, you can pay to have that CAD turned into a 3D model that will be shipped to your door. So
that's cool. Yeah, I had seen that part. I had not seen the part that, about them making the models themselves available. That's pretty interesting.
Yeah, it's, you know, it, I believe it's actually a little bit more to get the digital file in order to do that, because they don't want people using it for a commercial purpose. So it's around $100 last time I looked. But if you go on TurboSquid, there's people that have made just about every car. I mean, we own a Versa Note, which is one of the top selling cars in America in the subcompact category, but it's not really a popular car, so to speak, as far as like something that somebody wants a model of.
Sure.
Went on there, somebody already has a 3D model of it. Almost exactly like our car. Now, yeah, it's going to cost you in order to buy it. It's going to cost almost $100 because somebody took all the time in order to make the model, but it's still amazing that pretty much whatever you want has either been scanned 3D or somebody has taken the time in order to build it. And most of it is free. Sometimes you do have to pay for things, but especially for somebody who is a fan of something specific, that's maybe a little out in left field, like the Nissan Hardbody, for instance, that I was talking about earlier. Mm-hmm. If I really wanted to, and I wanted a ABS body rather than a Lexan one, there is CAD available that I could just pay the fee, download, manipulate how I wanted it, and then print it in pieces, have to be printed in pieces, because I believe it's a 7-inch by 7-inch bed for printing. So I would have to print it in pieces, but it's like it would be my own. It could be my own design if I really wanted it to be, you know. There's so many possibilities. Like, I just think about like your kids. They love Legos. They pretty much love every new Lego set that comes out.
Yeah.
You know, just imagine for a second if it was, if there were Lego kits that you could buy that were simply 3D printable Lego kits. So as soon as the license drops, like, oh, my kids really like, I don't know, Avengers Civil War. You could buy that and 3D print it, and they can put it together. It could be in whatever color they wanted. I'm not saying Lego's going to do that. I just think, like, that's the potential that something like that has, is you could add to your Lego collection and make it, like, a specific piece in order to make something work. I mean, we've seen Lego come out with all of these very unique car kits lately, like the Mini Cooper or the Volkswagen van. Yeah. They're just really sweet, but like somebody had to kind of noodle those out before they agreed to do them. And a 3D printer is kind of one of those, I guess you could kind of call it a cheat. but I mean, if there's something specifically you can't get your hands on, it's a really easy way in order to, you know, at least test an idea out. My wife and I, it's just a total problem solver for us with different things around the house that we find that we need. And we're just like, oh, just see if we can find a solution for that. You know, so we'll 3D print it. Didn't have a holder for our Keurig machine K cups. So we 3D printed one. Took a long time, but we actually have one. So, I mean, is there any specific questions that you could think of that the audience might have when it comes to 3D printers? Because I kind of feel like I'm starting to babble on a little bit. There's so much to know about them. And at the same time, there's so much unknown, because you can just make whatever you want. It's the most amazing thing.
Yeah, no, I think in the relatively short time that they've been commercially available or available to consumers, they've come a long way and they've more than proven their worth. And then the future, the sky's the limit with what you can do. And I think technology is only going to improve for the printers, for the materials. I think just everybody now, if you had questions about it, or just were wondering what the big deal was about 3D printing, hopefully we've more Josh than myself has answered some questions. Another thing, if you like the idea of 3D printed goods, there are sites where you can go and buy 3D printed items, such as Shapeways. And on Shapeways.com, you'll find items from James Knight, who runs Knight Custom RC, and he does custom scale accessories. And I'm using the term accessories loosely. One of the coolest pieces on my SCX-10 Jeep, it's a new grill that I had purchased from him.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the Angry Eye Jeep grill.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an absolutely beautiful piece. Came in three separate pieces. So I had to do some assembly to it, but it is just amazing. It's got the radiator as one piece, and then it's got space to put in light buckets and lenses. So I've got everything all decked out. It is the coolest, hands down the coolest thing on my Jeep. And I just love turning my Jeep on and letting those lights shine as it would on a real one-to-one vehicle. And he has just taken, his imagination has gone, and creativity has gone just out of this world with the parts and the components that he's putting together. He has pretty much anything you could think of or dream of or want on your scale off-road rig, specifically Jeep, but he does have other parts and pieces for other vehicles. You can get new fenders, you can get new grills, you can get new taillight housings, roof racks, jerry cans, anything you can dream of. He's already done the hard part, so you're going to pay a little bit for the parts and the pieces, but you get a quality product in the end. So I think if you're at all interested in 3D printed goods or 3D printed items, that's a good place to just check it out at shapeways.com. Just see what's available out there. And they have more than just RC things out there as well. I would guess that I know some libraries are starting to get 3D printers in them. Find a library that's near you that might have one, or find a friend that has a 3D printer, or just try to learn as much as you can about these, because I think they are going to have a huge impact. They already have had a huge impact in the hobby, but I think they are going to have an even greater impact as they evolve and as the hobby itself.
There is a resource online as well where essentially, I hate to use the term database, but it's a very large group. I know just in this area alone, there were hundreds of 3D printers. And all it is it's people that have given time of their 3D printer while it's sitting idle. And you can select or upload something to their 3D printer. And you can have them print it out for you. It does cost a fee. Sometimes I personally think the fee is a a little on the high side for the most part. It just depends on the brand of printer. Some of them are more detailed than others. But if you really, really want something that's cool, you don't have a 3D printer, you don't really want to go ahead and take that initial investment, or invest the space in your home, because they do take up a little bit of space. Granted, we're using an extra room for that. So we're not too worried about it, obviously, but spending that money in order to see, okay, you know, what is it that I'm actually going to get? Is this going to be something that's going to be worth it for me? That's a good way to go about it. If I can end up finding that link again, I will actually give it to Tim. He can post it on the website. You guys can check it out. I have never used it before, but there's got to be almost 100,000 3D printers on this website nationwide. If there's not, it's thousands and thousands and thousands. It's more than I can remember. But it's just people with 3D printers that are sitting idle, and they put them on there, kind of creating a network where somebody can say, oh, I want this print quality and in this area, because I could pick it up, you know, from an individual. It's going to cost this amount of money, and here's my file. So they're just kind of like a middleman, I guess you could say, to try to help get things 3D printed. So, you know, it's not just in libraries, but it's all over. I mean, they're changing everything. I mean, kids have a chance to be so creative now, and it's not that you don't want kids still to be in like metal shop or wood shop or any of these other places, but they have a chance to use something like ABS plastic or PLA, or even the materials are changing over time. They're eventually going to be like carbon fiber reinforced plastic, which is already something that exists, and they're already like 3D printing aluminum. But you know, obviously consumer grade stuff, you can't really go that far yet, but it's going to get there. You're going to be able to pretty much make whatever you want. And, as far as the hobby goes, you know, things are just going to keep getting better and more creative, and you can just make whatever you want. I mean, that car that's sitting in the driveway, you'll be able to pretty much make it in scale form if you really want. And that's a very, very cool thing.
Yeah, no, that's a really cool idea and possibility. I'm looking forward to seeing where that goes, and how far 3D printing evolves just in and of itself. But we'll definitely put links in the show notes to the 3D printers that you mentioned that you own, and to as many databases as we can. I'll also put links in for Shapeways and for Knight Custom RC as well, because I do encourage people to check out his products, James Knight's products as well.
Yeah, he does great work.
He does amazing stuff, and it seems like every day he's coming out with something new.
Mm-hmm.
New part and component. Hard to not want to buy everything that he comes out with.
That's how he gets you. No.
Yeah. Well.
I mean, that's the thing, really. It's like, once you've created something digitally and you know that it prints, it's so addictive to get onto the next digital file of something that you want to make. And then you figure out that, you know, you get that to the point where it prints as well. And it's just, you know, one thing after another. And before you know it, it's addictive. You've printed through an entire cartridge. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I'm definitely keeping my eyes open for a printer that would fit into my budget. I have a bunch of ideas that I want to try out. Very, very cool. Well, thanks. Thank you for that information on 3D printing, Josh.
No problem. I'm not an expert by any means, but I do know a little bit of something. And hopefully, you know, if anybody out there hasn't tried it, hopefully at least gets you guys looking it up online and kind of seeing where the hobby is going in that realm, because it's very, very cool stuff and something that's really on, it seems like it's on the bleeding edge now, but it's really not bleeding edge because it is now. So
right. Well, I'm looking forward to seeing what else you create with your 3D printer, and I'm really excited to see where you end up taking your two trail rigs, both you and your wife, what you end up building them into, and also where you end up driving them. I think that's part of the fun as well, seeing where people end up using their machines.
Oh, absolutely.
I'm glad you glad we had the chance to catch up after quite a while.
Yeah, absolutely. By the way, I was meaning to ask you, speaking of catch up, did you happen to see the Nuremberg show at all?
Bits and pieces. I definitely caught the tidal wave of information from HPI. And the many vehicles that they announced and highlighted.
They and Tamiya really seem to at least make quite a few announcements, but I didn't hear as much or even see as much news related as I have in years past. I don't know if that's just because there were a lot of manufacturers represented and they weren't showing as many new things, but in the past it seems like there's just been a lot more pictures and stories on stuff other than, I mean, HPI stuff was great and so was Tamiya's, but they themselves were the ones releasing it. It didn't seem like there was as much coverage as what there has been in previous years.
No, I would tend to agree. I think more information that I saw from those two brands specifically was from those two brands. I didn't really see any news from any other brands really. And as far as coverage of it, the other major news sources in the RC hobby and the RC industry seem to pretty much only cover HPI and Tamiya. And it leads me to believe that those were maybe the only two with big news to share. There was a lot of news from Spectrum or the Spectrum brand and some of the radios and transmitters that they were releasing and some of the electronics that they were releasing. But outside of that, I really didn't see as much as I have in the past either.
Well, if we have any international listeners and anybody did go to the show, I'm sure Tim would be more than happy to post pictures if anybody was able to go.
Yeah, definitely. If you do have photos from that event, feel free to let me know. Get in touch with me either on Twitter or Facebook. More than happy to share your images and give you credit above all things. But that was an interesting event. I would like to get to that event at some point in time, just to cover it. I'm still blown away by the amount of information and the amount of vehicles that HPI had announced. I think I'll, at some point in time, I would like to just do a show just talking about that.
Well, Toy Fair is in New York, and that will actually be this coming up weekend, which is the 13th, 14th, 15th, I believe. And in, I believe it is late September, there is actually a Dallas Toy Fair as well. But that's usually closed to vendors. Both of them may be closed to vendors only. But I'm not entirely certain because I haven't seen any information available on them yet. I just know what the dates are because I'm working for a company that's in the industry. That stuff is always getting emailed around, you know, dates for this, dates for that, stuff like that. So something that if an individual, you know, could get credentials and go, I would highly, highly, highly recommend going because there's so much to see at these places. I just was, like I say, I was a little sad that I didn't see as much coverage of Nuremberg this year, but yeah, I guess that's just they're definitely controlling a little bit more the releases on what's being shown, you know, just through a standard news release with all the product photography on it.
Right. Right. Yeah, the amount of information from those two brands specifically was, I think, more than enough to keep me busy for a few days.
Yeah. Yeah, HPI's was almost seemed like full turnover.
Definitely. Yeah. I'm excited to see where they end up going with their venture scale trail truck, quote unquote, brand as well. I think that's going to be interesting, especially to see how it stacks up against Axial, Viterra, and the like, G-Made and RC4W, you know, 4WD. I think the more the merrier in that.
Oh yeah, because they're all they all seem to have a different take on getting to the same place. I mean, some of them look scale, but they don't necessarily have that like scale frame. They've got the links, and the links are great for crawling. They also look fantastic, but it's just my personal opinion. I really like seeing the leaf springs and coils and things like that. That to me looks like a real truck, and I enjoy that a little bit more. But like you say, there's just getting to be more of them, and the more the merrier, you know. Everybody does things a little bit differently, and it's just so cool to see so many different companies sort of take an interest in to something that would have half a decade ago been considered just like a tiny niche, almost like people didn't pay attention to it like what they do now.
Exactly. It's and having scale be something that I'm a definite fan of, and definitely the part of the hobby I enjoyed the most. I'm really excited to see that, a selfish standpoint. But you know, the to see where all of these brands go and what they try to do to outmaneuver their competition will only make every brand stronger if they can all catch up and stay on top of their game. So,
the future
is going to be bright. That's for sure.
Absolutely. Well, it's like nobody knew they wanted a short course truck until Traxxas came out with the Slash, and then everybody wanted one. So, yeah. That's just what happens. And I think they basically say in racing, you know, the more the merrier, and the more competition, the better the breed. So I think it helps all around, especially like a lot of people put down Red Cat, but they're at the low end of the market. But I genuinely think they have made brands like Viterra, which Viterra didn't exist when we were younger. But even a brand like Viterra has come in and sort of like pulled some of the other ones down a little bit as far as the cost, the overall cost to the consumer. Not that Viterra is super cheap, but it's much more affordable for like a ready to run item. So I can't really complain about any of these new ones that are coming out. Just more competition and more options. Anytime you go to the store, it seems like there's always something new and different, and tons of different corners of the market. And there's a home for everybody. If only people would try new things sometimes.
Yeah, exactly. And there's, you know, the brand loyalty is going to play into that too.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
I try to be as brand fluid as I can be, although I do own more Axial vehicles than I do own any other brand, but they make good stuff, so I'm going to buy what I like too. So.
Well, yeah, exactly. Whatever works for you, and just so happens that a lot of people would say the same thing that you said, so.
Right. Another bright part of the hobby, or in a good part of the hobby. Whatever works for you, go in and do it.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right. Well, thank you again, Josh. Definitely a pleasure talking with you. I appreciate your insight into 3D printing. And like I said before, I'm really excited to see what you end up doing with your two trail rigs, where you end up going with those and what they end up morphing into down the road.
Yeah, absolutely. If anybody has any questions about anything, the things that we've talked about or that I've talked about on the podcast, they can always direct questions to @jhowarddesign on Twitter, or you can just email through RC Noob, and I'll respond to as many as I can. I'll probably be tweeting out some pictures of the rig that I had shared on my own personal Facebook, but I think that given the conversation here, you guys might want to actually see them as well. So I'll go ahead and tweet those out, and I'm sure Tim will just go ahead and pass them along to you guys.
Definitely will. Definitely will. So thank you again for listening to the RC Noob podcast. For more information on the podcast itself, go ahead and visit rcnoob.com. From there, you'll find links to our Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube pages, channels, profiles. I've been doing a lot more with YouTube lately, so definitely check that out. I have a lot of videos around the RR10 bomber from Axial, specifically, you know, unboxing, a light review out of the box, an initial run review to the motor swap, anything in between. Also doing quite a bit with the HGP402. That is the low-cost trail rig that I picked up for my youngest son. That is a evolution in progress. And we have a couple other vehicles that we have yet to do proper video reviews on, so we'll be doing that down the road as well. If you have not yet subscribed to the RC Noob podcast, you can do that through iTunes or through your favorite podcasting app. I do, as always, thank you for listening. I appreciate all the feedback we've been getting on the show, especially since the show quote unquote relaunched this year. I had been getting some feedback on the, not necessarily the quality, but the file, not really in the file type, just stereo versus mono. The show starting, I think, two episodes ago will be, and point forward as well, will be exported in mono for those of you that listen through one earbud. if you're at work or jogging or whatever, it will be released through mono, so you don't have to put two headphones in if you don't want to, or if you're not able to. But I'd gotten a couple of people asking about that, and I'm more than happy to oblige that request. So until next time, this has been Tim, and for Josh Howard, signing off, and keep those batteries charged and keep your nitro topped off. See you later.
Later, guys.